Hey friends, welcome to Family Life Blended. I'm Ron Deal with my friend Gayla Grace. How are you today?
I'm good. Good to be here, Ron.
We are in the Family Life Blended studio here in Little Rock, and this is another bonus episode of Family Life Blended. You ask, we answer bonus questions. You've submitted them online through social media, sometimes through our Blended and Blessed live stream event app, all the above. And we're just dedicating some time to answering your questions. Gayla, why don't you start us off?
Sure. This is a good one. How do you move past the guilt of failure of your first marriage failing and trust into something new?
Okay. So there's two parts to this.
Yes.
Guilt from the past and moving into something new, trusting in something new. I don't know. There's a lot of layers here. I just have some random thoughts. The first thought I have, Gayla, is believe God. Now, I don't want to oversimplify or make it to spiritualize this too much, but at the end of the day, we all have failures, and what are we going to do with them? Well, we have to believe God when He says, I've forgiven you. In Christ, you are forgiven. The old is gone. The new has come. I'm doing a new work in you. At some level, we got to lean into that and say, okay, if God's forgiven me, I got to accept that, embrace that. Maybe that helps my guilt begin to wash away a little bit. But I certainly don't want to linger on it any longer than God has.
Right.
Okay. So that's my first thought. My next thought is, yeah, there's a whole lot here. We've written about this a lot in my book, The Smart Step Family Marriage with David Olson. Spend a lot of time talking about unpacking the past and fear and how that can stay with us and keep us from trusting in a new relationship. But let me boil it down to this. I think of the guy in Mark chapter 9 who asked Jesus to help heal his child. And Jesus says, what do you want? And the guy says, you know, I want you to heal my child if you can. And Jesus says, if I can. And the guy says, okay, you're right. Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. I think this is where we get caught when the past creates an unbelief in us about ourselves, about trusting somebody new, about the relationship. Obviously, this guy in Mark 9 is talking about his belief in God. But I think the principle is also true about a human relationship. Like if somebody disappoints us, we have a little unbelief now about, can I lean into that person? Is our usness strong enough to go the distance? If it was a previous relationship, you carry that unbelief into new relationships sometimes. And so there's a part of you that does trust. There's another part of you that doesn't trust all at the same time. I think that's what gets confusing sometimes. And so part of this is acknowledging to yourself, this is in me. I've got to wrestle with this piece of me. And I'm choosing to lean more on the trusting side than the distrust side. And now I'm going to take actions based on that in my relationship with you, my new spouse, that shows my trust, that acts on trust. I think that helps deepen trust slowly over time, but it's not an easy process.
No, and I also want to say, I think it's normal to have what we've called often the ghosts of marriage past. So when you've walked through divorce and there's things in that past that maybe you haven't completely resolved, you do bring them into a new relationship. And so once you begin to see that with this new person, you need to step back and say, this isn't about them, this is about me.
That's really important.
What do I need to do to move past this? And it may take you a little while before you even recognize that. But once the other spouse says a comment to you like, but I can be trusted. I'm not that person you were married to before. Believe me, I've walked this road. And then you have to step back and say, oh, you're right. This is a different person. I can't go back in my head to the person I was married to before. And so identify those ghosts and then determine how you need to deal with them. And then the second part is, yes, there is risk in trusting a new person. But don't we deal with risk all the time? Anything good in life comes with risk almost every time. And you just have to step into it. If you believed God has moved you in the direction of marrying this person, then step into it and believe that God is going to walk with you even through the scary parts of it, even through the risk.
I love that last part because when you aren't sure you can trust your new partner, you can trust God that he's put you in this place. And so you lean more into that and see if you can't move yourself in the direction of trust. Now, it goes without saying, but I need to say it. We're not talking about extreme circumstances where you're dealing with somebody who's causing you a great deal of harm. We're not talking about those situations. We're just talking about that ghost that haunts, and how do you flick it off your shoulder, for crying out loud, and not let it just sit there and whisper in your ear all day long, every day. Okay, let's move on to another one. This question says, what do you recommend for having a regular time to talk to your former spouse about co-parenting arrangements? I think it's a good idea.
Absolutely. It's a great idea.
Sometimes people say, well, should that be on every Sunday or every week or every other day or what, every 2 weeks? Hey, I don't know that. Because I don't know you, I don't know them, I don't know your rhythms, I don't know how often the children are moving between households. So I do think you have to figure out for your specific situation how often and how frequent, but it needs to be regular and predictable. Those are two principles I fall down, regular and predictable. You know you have a meeting coming up every Sunday evening. You know that you can save whatever's bugging you until that conversation.
Right.
It helps contain the conversation.
And it's not going to happen at the transition of exchanging kids.
Not a
that
good time.
That is not when you want to have those meetings. So if you know you have it planned on X day, okay, I'm not going to try to talk about this right now because we're, and if the other person tries to bring it up, hey, let's talk about that at our next meeting.
Yeah, there's always exceptions. Like, let me pull that back a little bit. There are moments when you got to communicate something sooner rather than later. Great. That's understandable. But don't make that a regular thing.
Right.
Otherwise, neither one of you feels like you have any safe time. So, yeah, find that balance. Have lots of conversations. Is this working for you? The Sunday night thing's working for us. Great. Let's keep continuing that. Check in every once in a while. Different life stages, you're going to change it with the kids when they get to be different ages. All that stuff influences this, but regular and consistent.
And not via texting. I think there's too much that tries to happen sometime via texting, and that is not the best way to try to have
short and sweet communications. That's okay.
Yes.
But something of substance.
Drawn out, yeah, or scheduling. You know, you need to be in front of your calendar. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I'm with you.
A little deeper than that. Okay, how about this one? How do things differ when you're blending with a family that has kids, but you have none of your own?
You know, it's hard being an outsider. We talk about insiders and outsiders. Step people are outsiders trying to bond with insiders. When you're the only outsider, I call that a lone outsider. You're all by yourself. You know, I worked with this couple one time, and I'll never forget. She, in the middle of a counseling session, turned to her husband. Here was their situation. She didn't have any children to bring into the new marriage, had never been married before. He had three teenage daughters, been married once previously. She turns to him and says, honey, I just figured this out. You live, no, I got that wrong. I just figured this out. I live in a step family, but you don't. And it she was absolutely right about this. Like, his experience, he loves his wife. He loves his daughters. Like, it's family to him. That's not a big deal. To her, stepmom is an outsider, no kids of her own, nobody to retreat into, nobody on her side. She is all by herself. That is a hard place to be. How does that change the dynamics? Well, I think you rely even more on your spouse to help bring you into the family. Your spouse is the one who goes, yeah, hold on, kids. Let me check in over here. Let's see what she has to say. Like, that's the person who bridges you into family dialogue and decision-making and things like that. And so you're sort of dependent on your spouse. And but if they do a good job, you can find your way in. But on in those moments where it's everybody against you, wow, it can be really lonely.
Well, the truth is, in those situations, you make the most sacrifices. Because as the outsider, you are the one always flexing for the others. And if you're considering whether or not to walk into this, just know that at least in the beginning, it's there's going to be some hardship that you're going to walk into. But the other side of that, Ron, is that you're gaining a family.
Right.
I mean, as a single person, do you want to live that out? Or are you willing to step in knowing there's some sacrifice, but you are gaining a family that in the end could be a very loving situation that you would never want to live without?
Mm-hmm.
So there's two sides.
Two sides to it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move on. How do you come together on household rules? We got kids ages 3 to 18, but we don't agree on standardizing the rules as parents. Okay. Yeah, there's a problem there, right? How do you agree on household rules when you can't agree on household rules? Yeah, I want to say keep negotiating, keep talking, keep working through this. Last year we did a Good Parenting in Blended Families virtual workshop. I think that's still accessible online. I'm not sure. But here's the thing that we said there. If you can't come to agreement, then it's time to bring in a third party. Either mm-hmm. keep going on your conversation, read a book. That third party could be a book. It could be an online course you take about good parenting. It could be you call grandma because she's got 70 years of experience and learned a few things.
Right.
She's a good person to ask. A pastor, a teacher, somebody from your church. Help bring somebody in who can help you find agreement. Because if you can't find agreement, there's really no way to move forward.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, and I think you also have to consider the age gap here, 3 to 18. Mm-hmm. You know, Randy and I had this a little bit because we had an hours child, and there was a 6-year gap there. And so then in between our oldest and our youngest with 5 kids, there was a big spread of ages. And so we had to tell all the kids, okay, we cannot expect our 3-year-old Nathan to live by the same rules and have the same chores that somebody over here who's a late teenager has.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you just have to break it down and say, okay, we're doing the best we can. We are going to expect all of y'all to participate in household chores, but it is going to vary because of the age gap. And yeah. I mean, kids can understand that.
Yeah, I think you're right. But again, there has to be agreement with the couple.
Yes.
So that you can kind of create those expectations in the children.
Right. Completely agree.
You know, this next question, it occurs to me as we jump into it, is sort of that lone outsider. I'm a new stepfather, didn't bring any children to the relationship. I often feel that my life and my schedule is dictated by my spouse, my stepchildren, and my children's biological father lives in the other home. Leaves me feeling like a third wheel. I'm being dragged about with little control over my life. And I just want to go, yeah, and that's pretty much the reality of it all. But here's the question. What wisdom and godly perspectives should I adopt as a stepfather to sort of ease my internal struggle about not having any control? So he's wrestling with that internal sense of, man, this just bothers me mm-hmm. on an ongoing basis. And I, as I was reading that question, I was thinking of my big fat Greek wedding.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this wonderful guy marries this woman who's got an amazing family, but it's a Greek family and they are tight knit. And everywhere she goes, they go. And like there's this whole cultural phenomenon that this new husband's going to have to embrace if he's going to step in. In other words, that whole group is dictating your life and your schedule, and it's just sort of true. It doesn't mean you can't influence it or change it over time, but mm-hmm. you are entering into a system that is bigger than you, and so you don't have a lot of control over time, schedules, and whatnot. So prayer, acknowledging it for what it is, make sure you have something that is yours that you do have some say over.
Right. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can have some interests of your own and you don't have to attend every single thing. So if your stepkids are involved in baseball and there's 3 games a week, you don't have to be at all 3 ball mm-hmm. games. It's okay sometimes to step back and say, hey, I think I'm going to play golf today with my buds.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that will give you a sense of, I have a little bit of control over my schedule on Saturday mornings. Not all the time. You need to attend a good number of those games. But know that it is okay to step back and say, I'm going to bow out of this one.
Yeah.
I didn't do that well. I felt like I had to be at everything, and it built up some resentment in me sometimes, especially once I was dragging along our youngest son that we had later. And so I think I could have done better at saying, I think we're going to stay home tonight.
I could hear somebody saying, but I don't want to miss an opportunity to bond or show the kids that I love and care for them. And so there's that pressure to be at everything.
Right.
And I want to say, yeah, that's a good thought. You don't want to miss opportunities. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, a little self-care mm-hmm. just helps you, you know, actually be more present at the next mm-hmm. event. Biological parents don't attend everything
right.
every child does.
Right.
You don't have to either.
It's about balance. And if you feel this resentment start to bubble up, that's when you know, oh, I might need mm-hmm. to step back here
yeah.
because maybe I'm doing too much. So it's really about self-awareness of am I just beginning to feel resentment? And then you need to pay attention to that.
Yeah, I like that. Last thought for this guy. One of the reasons we believe in groups so much for couples and blended families, in this case, he may need to have a group of stepdads that he can just go get coffee
right.
with and go, man,
mm-hmm.
I am so frustrated. I you know, I have no say in what's going on in my life and my schedule. And just have somebody else go, dude, I'm with you. I get it. Yeah, sorry about that. You know,
yeah.
Tell us more about it. And you just sort of commiserate with one another. And, you know, that does help you find a little energy, I think, to keep going.
Yeah, even if there's not black and white solutions to
right.
it. Just talking about it sometimes helps. I agree. How do you show your marriage is the most important relationship in a blended family? And what are some examples? I so quickly go to an example, and I know I've shared this before when our family was having some just internal struggles of trying to blend all these kids and two step-parents, and especially Randy's kids. It seemed like there was some resistance with them and me. And Randy just was so quick to say, Gayla is not going away, guys, so let's figure out how to include her in this family, how to show some respect towards her, and I love her. And we're going to keep moving forward and begin to accept each other. It didn't happen overnight. I mean, Randy calls us remedial blenders because, you know, the statistics are what, 5 to 8 years?
Yes.
And we took a while, but we didn't quit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just keep going.
I love the image of that, him standing up for you with his kids and positioning you. Some logistics that I'll just toss in. Decisions about your time, about space and proximity and decision making. So if you want to get really practical, how do you show the importance of your marriage? Spend time
mm-hmm.
with your partner.
Right.
No kids, dating, whatever you want to call it, time. Make decisions about space and proximity. So we have bedrooms, and the reason we have doors on bedrooms is so you have space that is yours. That makes a statement to everybody else. This is our space, our time, not for you. The door is open. Maybe that's an invitation. They can come in. Things like that
mm-hmm.
really
good.
Matter. Riding in the front seat of the car together,
yes.
right? It makes a statement about who's in charge here, who's together. And then there's decision making. I always want people to not overlook this. A single parent, you've been on 24/7 for however many years you've been single, and now you have a step parent at your side who's helping you parent your kids. You're so used to making decisions. It's hard to slow down and say, hold on a minute. Let's talk about this. Make space for the step-parent to be involved in decisions. That, too, makes a statement to children about the importance of the marriage.
Right.
Time, space, and decision-making, very practical ways that make the point this marriage is important.
Right. Exactly.
The next one. My fiance's 6-year-old son recently expressed some sadness over the removal of a picture of his mom and her ex. In other words, the biological mother and the biological dad.
Right.
The son explained that he likes seeing pictures of his mom and dad together. So the question is it healthy or unhealthy to keep these pictures in the home? We understand letting him have pictures of his dad is important, but we are unsure if old family photos keep him from, now listen to this, Gayla, keep him from accepting the loss and working toward acceptance. Okay, I just want to pause there for a minute. If you're afraid that a picture will stop a child from grieving the mom and dad are not married anymore and not accepting that dad's now married to somebody else, then you're going to have to wipe his brain empty. You're going to have to get rid of all of his memories too. This question goes on and says the child's very young. We're not sure he has memories. Oh, he has memories. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has deep emotional brain attachments, neurological attachments that start when a child is a newborn. It's in there somewhere. They may not be able to have, you know, detailed images of mom and dad together. The point is this. your job is not to try to erase the past. It's okay for him to have pictures. It's okay for him to have memories. It's okay for him to talk at the dinner table about a time when mm-hmm. I went canoeing with mom and dad and we had a good time. And that is not an affront to your marriage. Now, sometimes it can be if kids are bringing that up over and over and over again and sort of throwing it in your face. Well, then you can tell it's an affront. But just a child is just reflecting on, reminiscing about some good memory. That is not in opposition to your new family identity. I do think you can put boundaries around this.
Oh, I do.
I had a family ask me one time, they had a kid who wanted to put an old family portrait above the mantle over the fireplace. I said, hey, that one's easy. No, no, you cannot do that. But you can keep that picture in your bedroom.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So there's a space where you get to hold on to those things. And we're not telling you to erase them. But out here in the middle of the living room, no.
No.
You got any thoughts?
Yeah. Or even on the hallway that you walk up and down all the time. No, it doesn't need to be there either.
Yeah.
I mean, I really think it needs to be confined to the bedroom.
Find
if
a space.
The child wants that.
Yep. Find a space mm-hmm. that's helpful. Again, the past does not have to be in opposition to your present. Enter that past. Reflect on that past. Allow kids to have those memories, to grieve forward as they move through time. And find ways of connecting in the present.
Right, yeah. And it does huge favors for a step-parent who is okay to listen to conversations about mom and dad. And, not, you know, don't shut that stuff down. If the child needs to talk about it, just recognize that's part of their grieving. All right, here's one. How do we break down a wall if it's already been put up? After so much rejection from my stepkids, I put up a wall, and now I don't know how to love them. I don't know how to love them. I think that they've just turned off how to love them. The truth is, I think probably it's going to have to start with forgiveness. So why was the wall put up in the first place? And is there behavior that's still happening that needs to be addressed, probably by the biological parent, that is not being addressed? And what's at the root of why a wall was put up in the first place? And so I think that's going to have to be identified, but I would bet there's a forgiveness piece also that really needs to be worked through.
Yeah. First thing I thought I was start praying for them, and that's probably connected to forgiving.
Mm-hmm.
But even if you sort of work through forgiveness and you're just sort of cold towards mm-hmm. them, start praying for them.
Yes.
Just try to, you know, sometimes the prayer, the honest prayer is, God, help me begin to develop a heart for this child. I really don't like them right now. I don't want to move toward them. I just need you to help me start moving in that direction. And that's a good first step.
Mm-hmm.
And then find small ways to move toward them. You know, sort of make yourself do that. Find something they like, share something you like.
Right.
Small movements toward may begin to make it easier to keep doing that.
Yeah. And you know, Ron, weren't there times even with your biological kids that you didn't like them?
Oh, yes. What time is it? Yes.
So don't just assume, oh my gosh, I'm never going to be able to have a relationship with this child because this is how I feel right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Those teenage years, those young adult years,
yep.
Man, there's times that I didn't like my biological kids some of the time.
Yeah. So last thought about this one, bless you. This person's trying.
Right.
And they've been in a hard place, obviously. So definitely have some compassion for you. And you've been through a lot. The rejection, it's been hard.
Right.
And here you are now. Something's beginning to shift because you're beginning to try to make movement, or maybe you're seeing something different in them. Either way, it represents, over time, some mm-hmm. things get better.
Mm-hmm.
And so keep pressing in that direction.
Yeah. And sometimes just maturity of kids can help. As they mature, then it's easier. But even when it's not, just give it a little more time, I would say.
Yeah.
How do you find a church that celebrates blended families? That's a tough one.
It is.
Sadly, it shouldn't be a tough one, but it is.
Yep. If you don't know, Family Life Blended has a searchable map where you can find churches that are doing small groups or something, some form of step family ministry. Just come to familylife.com/blended and click attend, and you will find our map. Now, not every church that's doing something for blended families is on our map.
Mm-hmm.
If you're listening right now and you have a small group or a Sunday school class and you're not on the map, put it on the map. It's free. We would love for you to be able to do that because we want people to find you. That's one way, one step you can take. But I got to tell you, Gayla, beyond that, it is a challenge. And I think it is trial and error for blended families. I think you just have to go talk to some of the pastors, start to get a feel and a sense of the heart of the church. And, you know, it's old school. You just got to try.
Yeah, but I think it's okay to overtly ask a pastor before you join the church. My husband and I did this. We moved a year and a half ago. We're church shopping, and we would take the pastor to lunch and say, hey, we're a blended family. Here's our situation. We are in high support of blended families. We want to do ministry. What's your take on it? And you kind of put them on the spot and see how they react. And if they give you this deer in the headlights look, like, I don't even know what you're talking about, run.
Yeah. That's good.
I mean, it's
run, Forrest, run.
Right.
I had a couple walk in and ask me that question one Sunday. I was on staff at a church and walked in, met, hey, looks like a new couple, walked up, introduced myself. And they said, we're new here. Do you take step families? And I was like,
wow.
I instantly knew there was a backstory to that question. I also knew now is not the time to find out the backstory.
Right.
So I just said, yes, as a matter of fact, we do. I lead a small group for step family couples. You're more than welcome to join us. And that led to a beautiful relationship with this couple. The backstory, by the way, was they had been burned big time.
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
And so here they are. We've invested time and energy and only to discover that we're not welcome. So we're moving to another place and we're not going to spend any more time, you know, wasting time. So we're just going to ask you on the first day they walked in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing to do.
No.
You'll get a sense pretty quickly if they even know why you're asking.
Yeah. I mean, the truth is the last thing that a blended family needs is shame or any guilt that sometimes a church can put on a couple. And you just don't need that.
They've already
find
got
another
enough
one.
Of it.
Isn't that the truth? Mm. For sure.
Okay. Let's do one more. How do we handle our children not getting along when my husband thinks his son can do no wrong and everything is my daughter's fault? My daughter is not perfect, but in his eyes, all of the problems are her fault and never his son's. Well, first of all, I just kind of want to say tongue in cheek, you know, it could be your daughter. You know? Hate to say it, but, you know, no, here's the point. Ironically, both parents in this situation are defending their child.
Right. Yes.
I mean, here she's saying, he's saying it's my kid's fault, but I'm sort of saying it's partly his kid's fault. I get it. Sometimes we do have biases. Sometimes people do see it incorrectly. Sometimes we're not nearly as open to our own children's, you know, what they've contributed to the problem. And so always start with humility. We should always back up a step. Try to be objective about it. But if this is sort of a, you know, sometimes this is a passing problem. We just need to talk it through. And yes, you're right. I can see now that my kid needs to change such and such. But if after talking it through, you're still stuck, I'm going to make a guess that what's going on for your husband is a lot of fear. There's quite a bit of pain. And here's rule number one from Ron, chase the pain. When you see that in your spouse, in yourself, when you see that in somebody you love and care for, chase that pain. Try to figure out what that's about. Because as long as that pain is there, that fear is there, they're not going to change their behavior. So the pain could be, Gayla, I can imagine that it's this dad going, I'm trying not to push my daughter away, so I don't ever want to hold her accountable for her behavior because I'm just trying to save what feels like to be a very fragile relationship with my daughter. Mm-hmm. So no, I'm not ever going to say she's at fault. It could be there's something going on between he and his ex-wife and the co-parenting relationship is fragile and he's worried that his daughter will just go to mom's house.
Right.
There's a lot of potential good reasons, if I could say that in quotes, good reasons, why he might end up doing this. Try to help him get a sense of that, learn what that's about, so that he can look that pain in square in the eyes and say, I don't want to let you run my life. And I need to be a parent with more options available than just defending my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard journey. especially when you're the helping spouse trying to bring that awareness to your partner. That's right. Not an easy process. But at the end of the day, that's really what it's going to have to take for something to shift.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it is just as simple as it's just easier for us to see it through the lens of our biological child than mm-hmm. through a stepchild. And so we have to be more intentional to think, okay, you know what? My stepdaughter also has a lens that is different, that I need to be able to look through her lens and consider what she's walking through, what how she's reacting because of her own loyalties or whatever. But it takes some intentionality of recognizing that we all have different lenses that we look through mm-hmm. and see the world based on what our past experiences are. And we need to consider that for our stepkids too.
Prayer. Boy, nothing will drive you to your knees like parenting children.
Oh, for sure. Oh, my goodness.
So wrap this in a whole lot of prayer. And by the way, if this question was yours, maybe you can share this podcast with your spouse and they can just have a few objective thoughts that might help them rethink how they're doing things. Gayla, thanks for being with me.
Good to be here.
Again, to the listener, this has been a bonus episode of Family Life Blended. If you have not subscribed to our regular podcast, you can certainly do that on your favorite podcast app on YouTube, or you can listen through the Family Life app. And if you're not familiar with Family Life Blended, you don't know, who are these people? What are they about? What are they doing? Look us up online, familylife.com/blended. We're the largest blended family nonprofit ministry in the country. We've got books and resources and videos and online courses and the Family Life Blended podcast, live events, virtual events, find it all. We would love to be helpful to your family. For Gayla Grace, I'm Ron Deal. Thanks for being with us.